12:11 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. This is WGN Radio. I'm John Williams. It's the holiday tomorrow, so we will not be here. You'll hear some other programming tomorrow, and then we'll back in the saddle on Thursday and Friday and into the new year. Question is, in the new year, where will the markets go? I'm just noticing, Steve Alexander, you mentioned that a lot of the experts say that the markets are going to be better by 10% or more in 2025.
Yeah, their investors are pretty optimistic, believing that the economy is still in good shape, on a firm footing, and with the new administration coming in with some thoughts that policies are going to be beneficial to Wall Street, that the markets will go up. But, they've been wrong before.
Yeah, well, when I laughed out loud, I think that was a gut reaction. I hope they are, and it sure would. It would seem as though the new administration is laying the foundation for more debt, mind you, and complicated policies that may not work out. But at least at the get-go, you'd say, well, that's got to be good for businesses that would pay less in taxes, high wage earners would pay less, and there'd be protectionist tariffs up for some of these domestic companies. So that would be good for business, right?
Yeah. The proposals to lower corporate taxes and ease regulations are seen
by, too.
Yeah, many investors. It's easy for them to look at this and say, hey, this is positive for the market, so let's go. Not everybody's on board with this, but the big ones who are telling us that we should see an average increase of 10% in the markets this year are Morgan Stanley, JP Morgan Chase. Chase recently, until recently, was more of a hawk and bracing for a downturn in the market for the coming year, but they've turned around. Oppenheimer's another one of the expert guessers, as I call them, who have been very bullish on Wall Street, and they're even looking at more than 10% for 2025, closer to 20%.
Boy, that's just hard to imagine, though. It's just hard to imagine to me. I guess that was why I reacted that way. I'm sufficiently worried about some of these things, like if we lose the migrant population that is doing so much important work, or if we tax imports that will raise the price of either domestically produced goods or imported goods, that will be bad for business. So I hope I'm reading from the wrong hymnal here, but I don't know how we avoid those things.
Well, those two things that you mentioned, the tariffs and deportations, that could reignite inflation, which would stall out the interest rate cuts that the markets benefit from, and that would upset the market rally. But for now, investors and analysts are appearing willing to wait to see more of what the Trump administration has in mind and what they actually do.
Yeah, right. I mean, you say those things. Do you really mean them? And even if you do, how do you do them? So it may be more bluster whether they intend it or not. But like you said, we'll see. But did you not also say in this report or a previous one that the last 2 years have seen unprecedented growth in the markets? Maybe it was the S&P. Was there a statistic along those lines?
S&P 500 is posting, despite being down today and actually the last few days, it is up 24% year to date and is set to post back-to-back annual gains of more than 20%. For the first time since the 1990s.
And yet that comes on the heels of an 11-day negative run. It was one of the worst runs the market had ever seen since the 1970s, right?
Yeah, but again, the markets have been up so much this year that a lot of profit taking was going on. Let's pull out some of our profits and see what happens.
Yeah, well, so in the Picayune Sentinel, we talked to Eric Zorn, the publisher of that local newsletter on Substack, the Picayune Sentinel, and he asked his readers a year ago at this time, what the Dow would the Dow break 40,000 at some time during the year? Boy, did he miss the mark on that question. The Dow actually got up to 45 for a couple of minutes, didn't it? We've been north of 44. Now we're south of 43. What's the Dow at right now?
42,518.
42,
it hit 45,073. Excuse me. I can actually tell you the date. December 4th.
Yeah. Okay, so here we are, the last day of the year. and we're below 43,000. But yeah. if say, it's just for round numbers' sake, say, and by the way, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, when Eric asked the question, was at 37.5.
Right.
And he said, well, we break 40,000. So that would have been about a 10% increase. Another 3,700 on top of 37.5 gets you north of 40.
Mm-hmm.
And his reader said, yeah, we will. Obviously, it zoomed past 40,000. But if we were to do another 10% increase at, say, 42,000, that'd be another 4,200. That would get us closer to 47,000. And that would be very good. That I think a lot of people who want to retire and stay retired would be very happy about that.
Yeah. Where did our friend Bob come in on what was his guess?
Dr. Bob, who comes Dr. on Bob, with Terry yeah. Savage and I a few times a year, and is going to make his prognostication to the City Club in January, he said we'll hit 44. And when I called Terry on that, I said, well, I guess he wasn't so smart after all. Bob, if you're listening, we know you're so smart after all. But she says, no, he didn't say it would finish at 44. He said it would hit 44. Well, it hit 45, and now it's 42-something. Fine. But he says, as he hinted that his prediction for this year is, like you said, going to be bullish, very much so.
Yeah.
So, well, he was right.
He
was right last time, and he's been right most of the time. And let's hope that he is right this time. As well, it's 12:17. There was one other prediction that I wanted to just reflect on briefly for you, and that is a prediction about robots and what they will be doing. A prediction about robots and what they will be doing on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hey, John, is a bullish market good for anyone except the already rich? I think it is. I mean, I understand the point. Most people don't have a 401k. Most people don't have a 401k. So a lot of this must sound like fiction or you know, the K-shaped curve lives on. But I would say that, and I'm not a trickle-down economics guy, I promise you, but if the markets are doing well and businesses are doing well, that is good for everybody. Some people more than others. We got to fix that.
And there's maybe a psychological effect too, right? If you might not be in the market, people, the markets are doing well, and that economies are driven in part by feelings.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think maybe entirely, but
Bob, I think the flip of that is true too.
Yeah.
I think that this consumer price, the CPI is a real number, but there's the consumer confidence index, and that is not a real number. That's how people feel. And I think sometimes people feel the way we tell them to. So if we constantly say eggs are expensive, but we don't remind them that gas cost $3.03 and not that long ago it was $5 a gallon, well, that's not news. So you don't feel real good about gas prices right now, but for the last 4 years you would have killed for $3 a gallon, and you've got that right now.
Yeah, it's a facts versus narrative.
Totally. And you know, this is more a story about how people like you and I and Steve deliver the news, but it is about, if we say, hey everybody, isn't it great? That would be the wrong way to say it. Gas is $3.03 a gallon. That's editorial, and maybe it's not even news. But we've got to find, I am editorializing now, some way to put good news in context. We've got to find some way to put good news in context without seeming to be boosterish. And I'll tell you something else that happened. We had some folks over to our house. Lovely people. I hope they come again. One of the guys said, I don't know about coming into Chicago, though, John. And then I gave him my speech. I said, really? What's the population of Wyoming? I'll bet they get 20 people shot in a given week in Wyoming. What's the population of Chicago? Oh, it's more than Wyoming. So if 20 people get shot in Chicago, mostly on the south and west side, where you won't go because you're not buying and dealing drugs and you're not in a gang, so you're going to be able to avoid that. Well, then maybe we need to remind people that 1 million people were in town for a convention last week, and we didn't talk about that, but they all had a swell time and ate steaks at restaurants. So when you tell me that you don't want to come into Chicago because it's not safe, I ask you, where are you going to go? What are you going to do? And by the way, would you dare set foot in Wyoming? Because your chances are pretty good that you, oh, wait, they're not that good in Wyoming. Well, guess what? Your chances downtown Chicago, if you do the math, are pretty good that you'll have a swell time. I said this over cocktails at Christmas time at my house.
How'd that go? Everyone's like...
And when I got done, it was quiet, and they were all looking at me. And I said, I'm sorry.
Have some more eggnog.
I know. Mm-hmm. I know. I did that.
And they want to come back next year?
I said they're invited, but I don't know. But I don't know if they'll take me up on it, Steve.
Depends if you hold it in Chicago or not.
Gun violence is a serious issue. Colin just hands me in Wyoming, where the gun death rate is significantly higher than the national average. So there you go. That's not why I'm bringing this up. Hey, John Williams, is a bullish market good for anyone except the already rich? I believe that's what got me going down that path. I did say, speaking of orgasms, there was one other thing I wanted to mention when they were talking about predictions for 2025. Steve says, the smart people say, the market will be up 10, maybe 20% this time next year. Woo woo. How about that? Here's a headline. 2025, women will prefer sex with robots over men, expert. Futurologist Dr. Ian Pearson says women will ditch men for robots to satisfy their sexual needs in 10 years' time and predicted that forms of robot sex will spring up in rich households by the end of this coming year. He said that women could even start falling in love with their robots. Many women are already loving their Roomba, but that's a different kind of love. While many would dismiss his ideas, the rise of the use and social acceptance of sex toys, dolls, the sex industry with artificial intelligence and robots in the mix indicates that his predictions could turn out to be right. He says that humans are not that far away from this vision at the moment and cites examples of some of the things I just mentioned. He also predicted that robot sex will be more common than normal sex by 2050, eclipsing human lovemaking. I'm just reading a story on the Wintrust Business Lunch.
I don't believe it.
A lot of people will still have reservations about this kind of sex at first, but gradually as they get used to it, as the artificial intelligence and mechanical behavior of the robots improves, they'll become friends with strong emotional bonds. Yeah, the paper titled The Rise of Robosexuals predicts that virtual reality sex will be commonplace by 2030 and that by 2050 we'll be doing it with machines more than people. That's just one story out there today as the world makes all of these crazy predictions for 2025. Steve, your thoughts?
Well, thanks for the opportunity to share these with you, John.
I have
no thoughts.
As do I. One other story here, this was Jake Sheridan's piece in the Chicago Tribune about 2025, and he was just talking a little bit about what I was talking with Eric Zorn about a few moments ago, the fee, fine, and tax buffet for Chicago City at City Hall. The city is settling on was not the original plan. Mayor Brandon Johnson proposed closing the city's budget gap with a $300 million property tax increase. City Council didn't go for that. The mix City Hall has settled on includes a final batch of $24 million in operational efficiencies. That means staff cuts plus several one-time fixes. $74 million in cuts to the federal COVID-19 stimulus spending, headlined by a dropped guaranteed basic income program. Oh, they're going to drop the guaranteed basic income program. That's where we do give money to people, no strings attached, betting that they'll sufficiently improve their lives with another $500 a month or $1,000 a month, that they'll actually generate more for the economy and themselves. We're going to drop that, huh? And then it's just, like we've said earlier, a menu of things. More for plastic bags at the grocery store. What was the other one that I was going to mention? Daily parking, residential parking will go up. Deck parking will go up. Your Netflix account will go up. That tax on your Netflix will go from 9% to 10.25%. That'll bring in $13 million.
And the Skyway toll's going up tomorrow.
Oh, is it tomorrow?
Yeah.
Although the city doesn't get that money, right? That's
Do they sell that too?
I think estimated probabilities 81%. What's it going to go to? Do you have that off the top of your head?
I don't. It's still in the sevens, but from the low sevens to the high sevens,
wow.
I think.
And yeah. I take that, too, when we're going over that way, because it's just so convenient. It's
720 to 780.
Wow. Wow. It does make you wonder, like a lot of these things, where's the point where people say, you know what, I'm not going to do it. So this is the Wintrust Business Lunch, though you wouldn't know it, judging by what we were talking about a little while ago. I'll tell you that right now. Trevor Wegener joins us now, Chief Economist and Director of the Research Center, Computer and Communications Industry Association. We're talking about retail, online, and omni-channel. Thanks for joining us, Trevor. You're on WGN.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So you all published a white paper. First of all, just tell us a little bit about who you all are.
Certainly. So we're a leading tech trade association. We represent a large number of firms in the technology and communication sectors. I lead our research center, which produces our studies and white papers. And I conducted this study to examine the impact of the digital age on retail.
I think most of us could tell you what it is. People are buying stuff online. Next question.
It's actually a little bit more involved than that. We found a strong impact of omni-channel retail. So it seems as though the digital age isn't just people buying things online for home delivery. That's, of course, a part of it. We all do it. But the customer experience is no longer confined to the physical aisles of stores or to your computer. A lot of times, consumers are combining the effects. They can navigate the vast expanse of the internet to find the products they need while they're actually in a physical store. So they can be walking through a store, looking at a product that they like, and then they can be price comparing on their phone and comparing other options right there to see whether or not they're getting the best deal and getting all of the product attributes that they care about.
And that's what you call omni-channel, so the two channels being brick and mortar and digital at the same time.
Indeed. And it can be a combination. It can be either they're in a store while comparing products and checking online, or they can be at home engaging in what we call buy online, pick up in store. That can be especially useful for rural consumers, we found. Most rural consumers have to drive a pretty hefty distance to get to the nearest store. So when they can buy online and pick up in-store, they can be certain that the product they're looking for will actually be in stock when they arrive at the store, instead of driving 30 miles just to find out the two items they were most looking forward to won't be in stock until Tuesday.
Are there slots you could drop, though, these various means to purchase stuff into? That is, brick and mortar old school is 47% and online is 43% and omnichannel is 12%. Is there some calculation like that?
There are a number of different estimates, and it gets a little bit tricky. So the traditional way of dividing it, the way that's actually collected by federal statistical agencies, says that it's about 85% brick and mortar and about 15% online. But that's because they don't have a way of capturing that omni-channel mix. All they're doing is capturing where is the payment processed.
Because that sounds low. That sounds low, doesn't it?
It sounds a little bit low because a lot of consumers are sort of combining it. They might be paying in the brick-and-mortar store, but they might have actually ordered ahead of time on their phone, and then that's going to be recorded as a brick-and-mortar sale even though they ordered ahead.
I still would have thought it would be closer to 50-50 these days, but evidently it's not there yet. What does the retail industry say about this? Are they happy about it? Are they indifferent about it? What's their attitude about the sort of changing means by which people shop?
So the retail industry is mostly reacting to the evolving preferences of consumers. And our study looked in detail at how consumer preferences are really driving this trend. You know, we surveyed consumers about their preferred attributes, engaged in what we call conjoint surveys, in order to estimate exactly how much they value different attributes. And it turns out that consumers actually don't care very much for the vast majority of product categories about whether or not they're buying online or in store. You know, first and foremost, they care about price. No surprise there. But once you remove overall price from the picture, specific attributes start to pop up as being very important to them. They care about shipping cost if they're considering ordering online for home delivery. If there's a significant shipping cost, that's a major discouraging factor, pushing them away from getting that delivery to their home. On the flip side, travel time to the store is a major factor determining how much they're interested in actually going to the store to look at a product. Again, no surprise there. It costs time, gas. And, you know, there's a non-trivial element of the risk that you walk up to the store and it might not be there if you're not engaging in that omni-channel buy online, pick up in store strategizing to make sure it's already in stock. Also, order time, return policies, these are factors that are taken into account with most purchases. And consumers are really reacting to this evolution in consumer preferences, adding these options because consumers are demanding them as soon as they see them offered.
So what do the stores say about that? It would seem to me like if I'm walking down the aisle of Costco and I see it at maybe I'd be walking down the aisle at Target and I would see it cheaper at Costco. Target might not like that. Maybe Costco doesn't like that. Do the stores care that people are maybe shopping with their devices in their stores or maybe at home doing crosstabs?
Well, they certainly have to care because consumers are engaging in some pretty strict price comparisons. So this means that because consumers are checking on their phones very often, and we actually have multiple studies that have looked at this, it really forces different retailers to make sure that their prices aren't too far apart because consumers are doing the quick math in their head. And if they can just, you know, drive down the street 4 minutes and head to Costco to get a cheaper price and they're already a member, they're very likely to do that if they can check it on their phone, which many consumers, an outright majority now, are aware that they can. So it really does discipline the pricing decisions of retailers.
Is that it? It's disciplining the price strategies of retailers. All those other factors notwithstanding, price is still the driver, right? That's the most important thing.
Price is always number one. Other factors do matter, however. For example, consumers noted that for certain product categories, they do really want to have a sort of personal, tactile experience with the product. For example, high-end purchases, expensive clothing items. No surprise, if it's the first time that you're buying an expensive shirt, for example, you want to try it on, make sure it fits, make sure it looks good on you. Maybe once you already have one at home and you know that's your size and that it looks good on you, you're comfortable buying it online. Yeah. That initial tactile experience, it's important for consumers. There are advantages that brick and mortar has.
Advantages brick and mortar has. That is, you can see it, you can touch it, you can feel it, you can decide if it's the right, if it fits or if it's what you'd hoped it would be. I must say that my observation is that the return policies are important, 30 days, 60 days. I wonder how many times you get something, it's not right. Hell, now what am I going to do? I got to box this thing back up. And 30 days lapse, and now you own it. And that's a real bite in the butt. To me, that's a major drawback from online purchasing.
Certainly, and we have seen that is a major driver of consumer decision-making across apparel stores, home improvement, electronics, really every retailer except grocery, return policy matters, and that makes a great deal of sense. Usually you already know when you're picking up, for example, a piece of fruit or a vegetable at the store, yeah. You can generally tell whether or not it's good or not. You're probably not returning it.
That is interesting how many people now I see those personal shoppers or whatever you call them, virtual shoppers at grocery stores, picking out tomatoes for people. And that's handing a pretty personal decision to somebody else's eyeballs, isn't it? Just give me a quick summary of any other trends in the industry that you have observed in this paper.
Certainly. So we actually did a consumer side analysis to identify who benefits the most from these online and omni-channel options. And we found that while urban consumers can save a significant amount, over $500 per year, just from gas savings and time savings from buy online, pick up in store, or home delivery, rural consumers can save a great deal more because their drives to the store are much longer and they have fewer options. If they drive to a store and something just isn't in stock, it's often another 30-minute, 45-minute drive to the next best alternative, or they just have to wait a few days. When you add up those savings, it looks like rural consumers can save nearly $1,000 a year just from having these options. And that's not accounting for any price differences between online and offline, although other studies have found the prices tend to be very, very tightly locked. So the price differences are probably near zero.
One last thing. Just give me some thought in general you have about Amazon. They're the big dog in the room here, or whatever the saying is, right? What should we know or learn from Amazon right now?
So I think that our study shows why it is that Amazon cares so much about having a very strong logistics team internally, because consumers really do come to expect delivery to be within a certain amount of time, and they really do track the days. We found that it really does matter if you can offer same-day delivery. That goes a lot further for consumers than, say, four-day delivery. And if they expect two-day delivery and it's actually taking 5 days, that has a major impact on future consumer purchases. So it really does help help us understand Amazon's priority on making sure deliveries are out there on time and delivered when they're expected.
Saw those vehicles out Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. Trevor Wegener is the chief economist and director of the Research Center Computer and Communications Industry Association. Trevor, it's always interesting to talk to you. Fascinating, really. Keep doing that, and we'll visit again.
Sounds great. Great to talk to you as well.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. More business news with Dave Schwann.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The Chicago Business Barometer, released yesterday, slipped over 3 points to 36.9 in December. The monthly business survey produced by the Institute for Supply Management and MNI showed the third consecutive decline, the lowest index since May, and below the 2024 average. The slip was led by a fall in new orders, but employment advanced by nearly 12 points to the highest level since November of last year and above the 2024 average. The price at the pump looks to be lower next year. Gas Buddy's 2025 fuel price outlook is forecasting a third consecutive year of lower gas and diesel prices. The report said we'll spend over $12 billion less on gas next year compared to 2024. It's a full day of trading on Wall Street, but the bond market will close at 1 o'clock. That's your Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Dave Schwann.
We got a couple minutes to visit with Clinae Hedspeth, who is the Department of Cultural Affairs Director here in Chicago, or Commissioner. Thanks for joining us, Clinae. You're on WGN. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm really good. So,
good.
The city's Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events is putting on two big things, I guess, tonight. Tell me if there's more, but you've got Art on the Mart and you've got the fireworks, right?
That is all one beautiful thing. It is a 2025, New Year's Eve type of experience on Chicago River. And we are super, super excited. It is truly going to be a spectacular event.
I'm glad we're still doing the fireworks over the river like that. I don't know how long we've been doing that, but that nothing makes our city look prettier than the buildings lit up over the river with fireworks going off underneath.
That's
crazy.
That's right. And so, I mean, the fact that we have that beautiful, the river, right, that runs through our city, and to activate it and it, the bridges, and for it to be just a center of the city. And I do want to share that, Chicago's, we're known for so many things. One is our architecture, and how amazing that we are projecting on the Art on the Mart, which will become at 11:55, a full out, it's a projection on there, and it's a countdown, it becomes a large clock, and citizens get to bring in the new year together.
It's 2.5 acres, the facade of the merchandise mart, and, and I'm glad we're still doing this, because this happened maybe starting with the pandemic, or right around there, where they would shine the laser display up against the building, right?
Correct. But this time we're doing projections of artists and the countdown clock, which is so fascinating. And I want to digress just a moment. I was listening in on how you were talking. They were talking about the old fashions, yes, and the different drinks. I want to remind all of our citizens, our fellow neighbors, that, you know, CTA is offering free rides on trains and buses starting at 10 p.m. to 4 a.m. And that's another testament on how great our city is. It's a family-friendly event. And I want everyone to come down. It's happening, you know, despite the rain. The fireworks will be on all the bridges, and we will have a good, good time.
Starting at 10 o'clock, the Art on the Mart display begins with the countdown clock displayed on the side of the building at 11:55. Yes. And then we count it down to midnight. And the fireworks go off at 12 p.m.?
The fireworks go off. Yes, they do. And so, you know, whether you're at the Franklin Orleans Street Bridge, LaSalle State Bridge, it's going to be an experience. And how many times do you get to come out with all of the neighbors from all the different communities, all the different wards, to celebrate who we are as a city? So it's going to be great.
Details are at Chicago at the website is chicago.gov/NYE, right? So if you want to know more, chicago.gov/NYE is New Year's Eve.
That's right. That's right. I want to end also with letting everyone know we have drones going over, so there will be footage.
Oh, wow.
And I want everyone to be engaged.
Yeah,
and
it sounds
enjoy.
Like they will be. Good on you all. Weather be damned. We're going to do this thing.
That's right.
It's going to look great. Clinet, our best to everybody.
Thank you. You too.